Well, nothing's up, Dan Tiberius. How you doing? LOL. Good to see everyone here. How we doing today? Let's make sure that I've got all this proper. All right, looks like we're doing good. How's everybody doing this fine afternoon? I'm getting ready to got 1 week left before I leave town to go to a road trip to promote the event in Austin. Which I don't want to say too much just yet, but looks like we're going to be getting some more cool named people on the ticket. Oh, not much, no borders, not much at all. Hey, TC, greetings from Virginia Beach, huh? Well, thanks. I'm not near anywhere near a beach. I'm way on the inland northwest. The beach actually sounds nice. It's fucking hot today. But that's what happens when it's summer. I've heard something about the amount of time the sun's rays hit the earth and the angle. I'm not sure. I mean, we could all be on a flat Earth, which would be, was at the event in Serpent Mound with the Grimerica crew, and Darren's up there giving a presentation, and he starts talking about the globe, and he throws out a bunch of beach balls, and people are grabbing them, and I told him that he missed a golden opportunity there because he could have just said, "Well, I'm trying to be inclusive," and had a frisbee that was the Earth. And he could have, had a flat Earth or had their Earth too. How we doing, screwdriver? I hope you saw my Flooding America concerns. I didn't actually. I'm sorry. Sorry there, screwdriver. I didn't see that actually. I'm a stone throw away from the Skagit River. Oh, nice, no borders. Cheers, DOA. Feels like 115 today. Yeah, that's warm. Woohoo, it's Dan time. Yay. Major Dick Bone says morning all. Okay, so Flooding America concerns. Yeah, I haven't seen anything about Flooding America yet. Sorry, I haven't been. I can't keep up with all this stuff that I get sent as usual. I try, man. I really do. But Jesus, wheeze! I get sent so many things, and so much of it is. I mean, it doesn't. So much of it's just time consuming. Right, like this, what we're doing here. Going through this, it's like I've been talking to, I don't know if, how many of you have seen my community post, but I've talked to Jeff. I mean, currently am communicating with Jeff about, oh, sorry, screwdriver. Yeah, I'll look for it. I'm sure that I'll find it. Was it on YouTube message? Let me know if it was a YouTube message. Anyway, I've been talking to Jeffrey Drum from Land of Kim, and when I'm done with all of these, he's got another video that he wants me to check out that's got like the evidence for the iron deposits and stuff under the Giza Plateau. And we'll go through all that stuff, and then I'm not gonna have him on for a live stream. I'm actually gonna have him on it, and I'll interview him and then edit it and put it all together and stuff. No, Jeff's not mad, dude. He might not be happy about some of the stuff that I said. I'm sure that I got some things. We don't agree on everything, and that's okay. I honestly, as you've seen, if you watch my last one, this is how we move forward. We by being willing to discuss things we disagree on, we can like advance our ideas and advance our knowledge. A Facebook message. Okay, screwdriver. I will check it out. Thank you. Yeah, just a pretty cool dude. Exactly. Yeah, I figured you were joking, no borders. It can be difficult sometimes to catch sarcasm through these things, It's crazy how that works, but it is sometimes difficult to know if somebody's joking or not. Yeah, Jeff's a good guy, man. Most people in this community are so used to either having yes men or complete the just degradation of a disagreement. You're a fucking idiot, or it's like, oh my God, please tell me more. And so, yeah, I found a lot that when I disagree with people, but I do so in a respectful way and with like, I'm obviously paying attention to the data. I'm obviously reading what they send me. I'm just not jumping into straight one camp or the other on it. I found that I have a lot of really interesting interactions, really meaningful interactions. People tend to handle that well, and it kind of makes sense. Although you're good, no borders, you're good, man. Well, yeah, it's not just room to debate to figure shit out, DOA. It's actually a way you can discuss the issues at hand, right? So we'll give it a couple more minutes and we'll get started. I usually try to get the viewers to a close to 100. We're sitting at about 70 right now. I usually try to get about 100 people just to roll in before I get started. That way, most people can more or less stay with us up until the ads. And well, then they can probably just fast forward through one of the parts where I'm just sitting there going, bleh, bleh, bleh. I'm sure that's going to get clipped somewhere. It's one of the funniest things in the world, having a large number of people that hate me so much that they, you know, live streams are where you looked if you want to catch people making mistakes. They don't get to script it. They don't get to edit it. They just got to fuck it up and as they go along. And so I'm sure that my haters tune into these things religiously, and that just makes me smile. Yeah, flat earthers are generally speaking, they bring some very, you know, when the arguments are things like how do you keep water on a sphere and shit like that, you know, you're dealing with people that really don't have a very in-depth knowledge of science, right? So, yeah, Dylan, I've noticed that. It seems like he's open to the idea that Jeff's open to the idea that there could be flaws in his work. Thanks, DOA. I appreciate that. The thing is I think it'd probably be less about hashing it out and more about just discussing it and, you know, making people happy. I was playing Candy Crush Saga. I had a streak going, but I made it. Well, thank you. All right. I don't pronounce anything with that throat clearing noise. There's certain accents I don't do. Hey, Frank, respect you too. way to stick to your lack of guns against Professor Dave. Yeah, I've got no desire to go fighting people over ideas. That stuff, that's honestly really stupid, let's be honest. The idea that I'm going to fight about this in order to get somewhere. Yeah, that's kind of crap. Well, I guess more people are leaving since I haven't actually started. Okay, well, fine. We'll just go ahead and give it another second then. But then we're going to go ahead and get started here shortly. Yeah, I think we need more of these kinds of conversations. But unfortunately, we don't see a lot of that in this day and age. It seems like you know, people are very much, they want to stick to their theory and whatnot. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Science is the good stuff. All right. Fuck it. There we go. Diving on in.
Red pyramid and great
hydrochloric
pyramid.
Acid.
Central pyramid. Yes, correct. Yeah.
Goddamn.
Okay, so again, we're talking about the white, the black, and the red. The three colors.
Yeah.
Encoding knowledge of how each one operates. The limestone itself is for the concentration of those electric fields. And the paper I'll present here in just a little bit proves that.
Okay.
That the Great Pyramid, they only tested the geometry of the Great Pyramid, mm-hmm. but I would hypothesize that this extrapolates to all of the pyramids, including the Red Pyramid, Bent Pyramid, and Central Pyramid,
yeah.
that they all have specific geometry within the tetrahedron shape, like different slope angles.
Yeah.
So why are the Egyptian pyramids all different slope angles? They're all pyramids, but they're all slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the
the question is like, why were they different angles? Like, was that on purpose?
Yeah, it's on purpose. Yeah. So it adjusts the concentration of the electric fields. The slight variance in the geometry shifts the focus of the electric fields to the specific areas around the reaction chambers.
So are you talking about specifically the three on the Giza Plateau?
All of them.
All the pyramids that exist out
correct.
In Egypt.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
all getting lightning bolts hitting them.
Not necessarily directly, but in the vicinity.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. So the next thing here.
Well, that is interesting idea. Again, the idea of the limes of the pyramids, like dispensing electricity, storing and dispensing electricity, at, you know, at preordained times and stuff is, that's something I'd have to see tested. Because yeah, I understand that certain stones could store and discharge electricity, but it's at such a tiny amount. And, like, how do you put it? There's like, you know, there's things in the Great Pyramid that make you ask questions. Like there's the copper wires that you find, you could call them wires, the copper leads, the copper handles that are in the Gutenberg shaft where the door is. But those are so small that they're not going to be carrying much electricity in it. So, you know, It gets the electricity stuff on, and this is going to be the part where, as a guy who works with the stuff, I'm going to have the hardest part on that, because I look at it, I just shake my head. I'm like, I do not see how this could work, and I mess with that stuff a bunch. Saw your appearance on the Waiting for Nintendo podcast. Yeah. Yes, I have played Super Metroid. Not a whole lot. I have beaten it, but I haven't, like, beaten it. But, yeah, I beat it a couple of times. Super Metroid was a really good game, but, you know, honestly, my favorite stuff as far as that, like, the NES was my big one. Hey, how's it going there, Jeff? You're right here. We are watching the video, my friend. Okay. Yeah, we're I'm watching it, but I don't really, man. What do we got here? The paper's about to talk about explains it. Okay, awesome. Yeah, Jeff's here in the comments. Go back to sharing the screen.
Oh, yeah. It's a scary place to live back in the day.
So it actually would have been completely safe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So same thing as like, you know, in my opinion, if you were beside these things, it's completely safe to stand next to a huge structure that's going to act as a lightning rod, mm-hmm. because you standing on the ground would be under no danger whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. I ain't fucking standing next to that goddamn.
It would have been an awesome sight to witness seeing these things in operation. Yeah. But for example, when it comes to Avebury, it would have been completely safe to be in areas like the head end of the Serpent Temple complex, mm-hmm. which was actually designed for human beings to be inside of these things during these thunderstorm events.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I'll talk about Avebury here in just a second and how the function of Avebury.
Where's Avebury?
Avebury is in Wiltshire, England.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I'm about to show you a mathematical connection that proves that there is a link between the Avebury Serpent Temple complex in Wiltshire, England, and the configuration of the Luxor Temple,
okay.
which also has a cumulonimbus white horse lightning storm generator system.
The Luxor Temple does.
Correct. Okay, so this
show me that shit.
Yeah, yeah. I have some slides, and I'll talk about the function of Avebury. I want to make sure that we keep moving here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because again, I don't want to get too caught up on any. Because right. I have all this in the context of the rest of the presentation. Yeah, yeah. We're good. Okay, so again, welcome up, ladies and gentlemen. This is about to be the most epic presentation you've ever heard on the function of ancient structures around the world. Because again, my work doesn't just focus on the Egyptian pyramids.
Right.
And everything that we're talking about now is mm-hmm. going to establish the foundation of the mechanisms of operation that are going to drive the function of the Egyptian pyramids. Okay. It's all connected.
Okay.
And they all work the same way. The conclusion of this paper here just establishes a connection between the moon and the phases of the moon, earth tides, and lightning strikes.
Okay.
So there's the more, between, there's between more the lightning strikes during certain phases of the moon.
Okay.
All right. No, I don't want to let this run for too long because, you know, it's not my content. It's Danny Jones' content. So I do have to stop in there. All right. Take care, Jeff. I will talk to you soon. He's off to bed. He's on the other half of the world. Good to see you, man. Appreciate you working with me on this stuff. And yeah, I'll get a chance to watch all these things, you know. I know that you've been telling me White Horse Hills. I know there's also, I've got a bunch of people saying a bunch of different stuff about this. I'm trying to, just like I said, I'm going to go through and watch his presentations on Danny Jones. And so go through and see what we've got here. It's kind of difficult to do that if I, you know, just assuming things are jumping all over the place. Yeah, I had Jeff on for an interview about a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that. And, like I say, I'm going to have him on for some questions afterwards, but for now, I'm just going through it. And as I said before, the idea that it's all connected all over the world is something that I get a little bit on the far. I find a little bit on the far-fetched side. I do think that you're going to find places where they didn't know this stuff. Assuming that his hypothesis is correct, you will find places where they were copying it and they were insufficiently doing so. You'd find places where people were just stacking big rocks to emulate other people that were stacking big rocks and all kinds of things along those lines. I mean, you know, just seeing big rocks stacked on top of each other is a cool thing. So at any rate, it's an interesting idea. And as I said before, it makes it where he ends up seeing things that I probably won't and vice versa.
Okay. So again, we were talking
about certain parts of the world,
all over the world. Correct.
More lightning.
Yeah.
And what phase is specifically the moon?
So let me say here. So the conclusion that electrical currents in the rock matrix have a direct impact on lightning strike locations. This conclusion is supported by the fact that there are 25% more lightning strikes at high lunar tide when compared to the number of lightning strikes at low lunar tide.
Oh, interesting.
So there's a direct correlation
between high tide. There's more lightning.
Yep.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's wild.
So again, this goes back to your point about why these structures are built with celestial alignments, because the builders of these structures around the world understood what the electric universe has been saying. The electric universe hypothesis states that our solar system is an electromagnetically interconnected, integrated network, right? So conjunctions of sun, earth, moon, all of these celestial conjunctions have a direct effect on electromagnetic forces here on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So this ancient civilization was tracking things like the phase.
All right. I definitely have no problem with the idea of like differences in physical things changing the electromagnetic makeup of things. But the electric universe hypothesis, I do have a pretty, like on a fundamental level, it's there's a lot of things about it that, as a guy who worked with electricity, it just doesn't add up. It's almost too much to even get into. But so like every time I hear him, as I've said before, you have to kind of watch yourself when you do those knee jerk moments. And every time I hear him say electric universe, I do end up just kind of like, I cringe a little inside because you have to. The electric universe stuff is fringe science to begin with. And I dare say like everything that I've seen about it, which I haven't dug super heavy deep into it, but that's because again I've worked with the stuff, so it's like as soon as I start digging into it, I find so much stuff that just puts me off to it that I'm like, all right, it just seems like this doesn't know what's going on there. But like the stuff about the different wavelengths of different planets and stuff would I forget exactly how they put it, but yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like the different frequencies and harmonics different planets would be on, that doesn't make sense. Given what I know about electricity, it's, but anyway, it's, the evidence is quite often that I see is like, they talk about plasma strikes and stuff like that. And I don't have a problem with the potential of plasma strikes having happened. I do have a problem with the electric universe stuff. Hey, 757. Good to see you. Yes, I am continuing Mighty Dunkaway's goddamn moth come down here to eat my freaking vintage Bart Simpson shirt that I didn't even wear.
Phases of the moon and the tide with structures like Stonehenge and Avebury, which are specifically tracking these phases of the moon, so they knew exactly when and where these lightning strikes were going to occur.
Wow.
Okay, so this is another paper here that basically connects the recirculation of electrical current on the planet. Telluric currents directly affect where lightning strikes then stimulate more telluric currents. Mm-hmm. That's what this paper here is saying. The Ouroboros, an ancient symbol for the recirculation of electrical current.
Yeah.
An esoteric symbol that encodes
positive feedback loop.
Again, absolutely. As above, so below. Mm. These two power sources are directly connected. And it's a circulation loop of electrical current.
Okay.
Okay. Again, standing here on the Giza Plateau, we have the optimization of these natural resources. We have subterranean electrically conductive water, and we have huge deposits of metal ore minerals that are directly connected to telluric current flow and lightning strike locations. We also have subterranean natural resources like methane gas and hydrogen sulfide, which were also mentioned in the paper.
Yep.
That these subterranean gas reserves also have a direct effect on telluric current locations and lightning strikes. So we'll get to this in just a minute. The natural gas and petroleum refining facility that's located at the entrance to the Red and Bent Pyramid Complex in Dashur. They have a modern oil and gas facility that's right at the entrance.
No shit.
Yeah. It's a joint venture between Calda Petroleum and Apache Oil.
And that's the kind of stuff that does make for interesting evidence. You know, if they're hitting the same place, for the... the same place for natural gas and whatnot, methane and stuff, as they were from, and in modern day, as he's positive they were back in the day, that's an interesting way of looking at it. No, I'm not trying to get him spam. I'm just looking at what we've got here. I mean, like I'm saying right now, in this case, I think we've got interesting evidence here. That's, magnetohydrodynamic structure, explain it better than the electric universe. Yes. Basically, everybody does have facts, and everybody, we all look at it from our own worldview. Hola, I don't agree that Jeff's nuts. I think that he definitely is a true believer in his theory. I don't think that he's making it up. Maybe it is coincidental. But I mean, that's kind of knee jerky, right? That's not exactly. Yeah, the. There's no point aligning the structures to the stars for a functional thing that I see so far. But, thanks, Pam. I appreciate it. No, I like Jeff. I just don't think, I don't agree with everything.
Where they are processing natural gas and crude oil. It just so happens that one of the applications for aqueous ammonia is in processing crude oil. One of the many applications for ammonia is crude oil processing. And they have a crude oil processing plant located directly at the entrance to an ancient aqueous ammonia manufacturing.
Is that just a coincidence?
I don't think it's a coincidence.
It's holiday season, which means it's time to find creative new ways to hide your thinning and receding hair.
Well, anyway, I'll watch the ad so you don't have to. Dude sold his life and moved to Egypt. Yeah, he believes it. I'm pretty sure he's a true believer. I don't think that he's just playing. And I think that this is, yeah, I'm practicing my Flint impression to show you how ideas, LOL. Yeah, it's interesting the ways that a lot of these things get put together in people's heads. And then a lot of times that results in pushback to ideas that don't conform to yours. And I understand that, but it ends up with some pretty nasty stuff. Like the debate over where Atlantis is one of the funniest things, in my opinion, because it's like, I mean, you know, how many different places, if the world was up to that kind of thing, if the world in those days was all full of people that were like different civilizations, you know, it wasn't, I highly doubt it would be just one civilization that was like, we've got technology and nobody else does. So if you assume that more than one nation at that time had technology of whatever sort, then looking for Atlantis, you know, you're looking for numerous different things. So the problem at that point in my mind becomes, if you're going to argue over the location of Atlantis, when actually your evidence could be considered, like, you know, supportive of each other. To me personally, it becomes very frustrating. Hey there, Phil, how's it going? It becomes very frustrating because it ends up resulting in arguments between parties that do not need to be arguing with each other.
In the fucking pyramid?
Not using the pyramid, but I think that's there for a reason. I think there's always people in the know.
Is there something about that location that makes it better for making ammonia?
Not necessarily that they're manufacturing ammonia there today, but that facility. I've had people in the petroleum industry contact me, engineers, plant operators, and things like that, that have said, because I didn't know about this originally. My original hypothesis for the ammonia was just for fertilizers, and you can also use it for leach mining of copper. So it's always connected to fertilizer and metallurgy.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Two big things that we would also do if we went to an extraterrestrial planet. We would want to have fertilizer to fertilize crops, and we would want to have metallurgy so we can extract metals for building applications.
Right. Yeah, we would need a manufacturer.
A type one civilization.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. We would need fucking factories there.
Yeah, correct. And that's what you do. You don't bring a factory with you.
No.
You build it in site.
Yeah.
So this is a connection between like the Anunnaki myths and the construction of the Egyptian pyramids.
Yeah.
That they came here and they built these structures in situ to manufacture chemicals and mine metals.
Well, he just planted the flag a little firmer on that one, didn't he? I don't have a huge problem with that. It's just these are the kind of things that make it harder for me to accept. A lot more people would probably find it easier or more interesting, I guess would be a better way of putting it. But, you know, at that point, it's like, I mean, I would agree with everything he just said makes sense fundamentally. On the flip side, it's the odds of it being from extraterrestrial civilization are a lot lower, than it is for somebody being here. You know, I don't think anybody would disagree with that. You would have to be a hardcore believer in the Anunnaki to disagree with such a thing. But yeah, anyway, carrying on.
Type one civilization, very, very advanced. We're not even close. We've got 300 years before we're type one civilization. And everything that I'm talking about here is evidence of a proto type one civilization that may be more advanced than we are.
They came down.
All right. Just for those who didn't catch it last time, I have a problem with this type one, type two, type three civilization. We're not yet a type one civilization. How can we say that this even exists, right? I mean, these are currently imaginary, arbitrary lines drawn in the sand. We can't really say a type one civilization exists or has existed anywhere. So I personally find these kinds of standards, even though I know that they're made by scientists and stuff, these are the kind of standards that are, it's like if you say that, a tier one athlete is able to run a 2-minute mile, it's like, well, we have no tier one athletes. Okay. France did not score. You're definitely not talking about soccer up in here. This is America. We play football. We throw it with our goddamn hands, boy. And we measure the distance in the king's feet. And the king, we kick the fuck out of here. Yeah, we don't do none of that there goddamn soccer.
Anunnaki came here from Mars. They built the pyramids. Yeah. And they fucked a bunch of apes and created us.
Yeah, they came here for a good time, not for a long time. And then they bounced because they had all the
rich material. And we're a spinoff of them and the monkeys.
So again, let's entertain this conversation for a second, right? So let's say methane from the Step Pyramid and the ammonia from the Red Pyramid were being used for rocket fuel. And then they could use the...
I don't think that.
But that is an application.
Right.
To use those chemicals for, we do it today, for rocket fuels.
Right.
So let's say they built these things, they made all the rocket fuel that they needed, and they extracted all the metals to rebuild the ships, and then they bounced.
Yeah, right.
They would definitely be have to be like at Mars for that rocket fuel to do any good. If these motherfuckers came from Alpha Centauri, I don't think they're going to be using the same rocket fuel as us. But, you know, there is a lot of people that believe that they came from inside the solar system, Nibiru or Mars or some shit like that, in which case rocket fuel would, you know, old school would work. Now, it's not that we don't know football. We absolutely know football. We just don't know the fake football. That stuff that Europeans fight wars over and stuff. Yeah, we don't play that around here. Some people do, and you know, we lovingly and firmly estrange them from our families. So, I'm sorry, it's just what happens.
But I'm saying were that advanced of a civilization, yeah, to be able to pull off all the shit moving stones, what are the chances they would use combustion to fucking get off the
planet? I agree. And that's just a speculation that I like to entertain that from time to time. I don't think that these things were built by extraterrestrials. I think that they were built by humans. Everything about the function of these systems is indicative of Earth-based human technology. Mm-hmm. I've been inside all the Egyptian pyramids. I've been to more ancient structures, with the exception of Hugh Newman. Shout out Hugh Newman. He's an OG.
He's been on the show.
Hugh Newman is great. Yeah. Shout out Hugh.
He's the dude with the British accent, right?
Correct. Yeah, with the gold tooth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hugh's the best. Yeah, Hugh has been a big advocate of my work and a supporter.
Yeah.
And he's an OG in the ancient structure around the planet investigation. He's one of the only people that I know that has been to more ancient structures than I have across the world.
Really?
Hugh's a good guy. I like Hugh quite a bit. In America, we play football with our hands. Exactly. No, he's a really good guy. I like you quite a bit. He's got some pretty good ideas about things. He's definitely been investigating these things for a long time. Another guy I would point out that quite possibly should be on that list is Mike Collins from Wandering Wolf. He's been fucking all over the dang planet, man. That boy hath been everywhere.
But I've been to a lot of these things, right? Mm-hmm. I've been inside more Egyptian pyramids than most people. I've been to hundreds of different ancient sites in Japan. I've been to all of the structures around UK, England, Ireland. It's human technology. And I think that it was built at the end of the last ice age so that we could rebuild civilization.
So how
I saw you just have a short circuit there. I did.
No, I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you that it was probably built. I don't know. I think it might have either been built before the ice age ended, before the Younger Dryas impacts, if they happen, if that's what it was, if they were comet impacts. I think it was possibly there before it, or maybe right after. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Göbekli Tepe and things like that are probably older than the pyramid.
Yes.
But my biggest thing is how, like, the thing that, like, the pyramids are one thing. The pyramids are insane in themselves.
Yes.
But when you have all of those stones all around the pyramid that look like they're cut with circular saws and the scoop marks out of the obelisk and those perfectly square granite boxes inside of rooms that are too small to even fit through the doorway.
Yes.
That's when you start to, like, okay, like, you're losing me. I my brain can't follow this. Like, I don't understand.
It is pretty interesting you end up with, a coincidence that so many people end up looking at what's in ancient Egypt and thinking that there was some sort of lost technology there. There's so many things that baffle the mind, especially when you call yourself you talk about just a regular old backwards call yourself. See, I'm reading the damn comment at the same time. When you look at backwards things, like the technology that they were supposed to have at the time, it's like, Jesus Christ, dude, how could they possibly keep up with what we see in the record? I mean, it's amazing what we see in the record, right? But, you know, this is where, honestly, I think it's a combination of different things that come together to give us the best idea that we have. And I don't have a problem with the people that are trying to keep it more mundane. As a matter of fact, you'll frequently see me doing that myself. But I do think that, the rejection of any of these ideas without investigating them is obviously pointless. But it's a problem which is a huge problem with Egypt. Like, I talk about how my inbox is full of stuff that I can barely keep up with. It's like, I end up with just so much information that people hand me and I just can't keep up. And it's like, how am I, if that's the boat that I'm in, And you get guys, think about guys like Graham Hancock or Joe Rogan. And, you know, I get people asking me to send Joe Rogan information about things. So, I mean, like, I'm going to do that. But they're, you know, they want him to go dig in the ocean or go, you know, fund this or fund that. And it's like, man, yeah. So it ends up being, I understand where the academics oftentimes just throw up their hands and say, I'm not going to look into all these crazy claims, but it is worth investigating if you're going to dismiss them. Hello, hello, Caspian. How we doing? Send Joe a dick pic. I've already done that. He sent me one back, but I wasn't impressed.
And how do you square that with manufacturing chemicals to produce fertilizers and make metals? Like, there's something else. There's like a piece to this puzzle that seems like it's missing.
So think about it this way. So it's been since the 1500s. It's been 525 years since we came from the 1500s to 2025.
Right.
Modern technology.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the leap that we've made in 500 years.
Oh, yeah. It's insane.
Okay.
So no, now, not even that far. Like, we went from the Civil War shooting muskets and pistols to dropping
thermonuclear
bombs in 100 years.
A couple hundred years. Yeah. So imagine anatomically modern humans, as smart and as capable as you and I are. And there's a big, again, sort of this rhetoric that Neolithic hunter-gatherer civilization was not sophisticated. I think it's the exact opposite. So our Neolithic ancestors would laugh at how primitive and weak we are.
Right.
Right. They understood nature. They understood how to identify plants. They understood how to survive. They understood how to track the phases of the moon and the phases of the stars and all of this ancient knowledge. Right. They were the sophisticated ones.
Yeah.
And just because you wear animal clothes and you're a hunter gatherer does not make you any less sophisticated. Some would argue that domesticated agriculture is actually contradictory to the way that human beings are supposed to live.
Right.
No, I won't argue that it makes you less sophisticated, but I will argue that you can't really. You can't really say the, sophisticated, being more a culture that's complicated, that's sophisticated, that's got all kinds of varying ins and outs and stuff. That doesn't necessarily mean that the people are very knowledgeable. They can be extremely primitive in their knowledge and their beliefs. And that's where, they can have, they can be really, 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 really good at the things that they do. They can be extremely skilled, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's and we know this for a fact. Quite often it seems like we've supplanted skill with technology, like it's just kind of taken the place of it. Hello Colcutt, good to see you. Wait, that means no kitties. Yeah, you're so level-headed. Imagine researching just to make a video of shit. Oh yeah, I could do that. I'm an American man. Give me a thumbs up. Hey there, I'm an American man. I appreciate that. I too am an American man. I like to, when Metatron posted this thing not too long ago, where he's like, he had like a waffle meal at Denny's the first day he became a American citizen. And that's what I had to post Hulk Hogan's, I am a real American. Cause come on, man. I mean, I love seeing it with people like, come to the country and make a better life for themselves stuff. It's, I don't know, man. I'm a bit of a flag waver. I'm not a flag waver in the regards that I think my country does no wrong or anything, but I am very much I love the fact that I don't have to worry about me being on here and I can talk shit about any politician that I want. And nobody's going to come and throw me into a fucking gulag for it. If I want to make fun of anybody that I want, nobody's going to come and throw me in a jail cell for it. I kind of like that. I kind of like that's encoded in the laws of my country. Now, get me talking about the government and politics stuff, I'll bitch all fucking day long because there's all kinds of problems. But we do have some things that I do appreciate, and that's one of them. Nobody's going to... you're a Scottish man. I win. Oh, well. Yeah, imagine if you were in the UK. Exactly. There's so many fucking shit that, I don't know how many of you guys saw the Count Dankula with his pug. This is fucking damn near 20 years now, 15 years. But he had his little pug that was, he'd made it an angry windmill boy. And it was all like, all happy about it. Every time he'd see the mustache man from Germany get on there and give a speech. And yeah, it was a joke, but it got him actually arrested. It didn't get his video taken down. It didn't get him a channel strike. It didn't kind of shit that I have to worry about. Oh, man, I got to make sure and navigate the words that I use so I don't get demonetized. Oh, no, no, no. They threw his ass in jail. And I don't give a fuck what you think about that guy or what you think about his joke. I am so fucking happy that I don't have to worry about that. I can make as off-color of a joke as I want and not have to worry about that happening. So, not yet anyway. Well, that's one of the beautiful things about this country is it takes a lot to strip one of those constitutional rights away.
No, it's killing us.
Domesticated agriculture takes more time and investment than hunter-gatherer activities, right? So they were living the dream, and they were just implementing their knowledge that had been developed over 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 years. So, for example, the Japanese Jomon civilization that was also building stone circles and passage chamber reactors all over Japan, the exact same stuff that they were building during the Neolithic period in Europe. The earliest Jomon artifacts go back to 30,000 BCE. So during the Ice Age.
30,000.
30,000, right? They then lasted until around 300 BC. So this is a civilization that was in Japan during the last Ice Age, survived the cataclysm, and then existed for another almost 10,000 years before around 300 BC. And the conventional date for the stone circles that were being built by the Jomon coincides with the conventional dating of stone circles in Europe, approximately 3,500 BC.
Now, personally, I would really like to look into the evidence that it was the same bloodlines or not that were making these stone circles in the Jomon culture. You know, a lot of times we see, like I talked about this before with the Clovis culture here in the Americas. You know, you got Clovis stuff in, you know, all across the continent. And it's like, so if you go from one side of the country to the other, you know, they were speaking different languages and they were praying to different gods, but they had some of the same toolkit. So it's interesting to see how much of these things overlap. So this is what I mean by, and I know that there's a lot, don't get me wrong. You know, I throw a lot of rocks at mainstream archaeologists and anthropologists, but there's a lot of them that really, you know, they get this kind of stuff. This is what they do. And so they think about it on a nuanced level and they understand that, using the Clovis, Clovis is just a term. It's a big fat catch-all term. Jomon could be, well be just a big fat catch-all term. As a matter of fact, if it lasted for 27,000 years, yeah, that's probably a big fat catch-all term. But it would be, you know, I'll have to dig into that stuff some. That's where things like this come will be nice because it'll allow me. I will be making a video. Basically, I'll be making a pretty long video when this is when we're all done going through all this, and I'll interview Jeff for part of it. I'll ask the questions of him that I've got. I'll have him flesh out things that I had questions about. But I'm also going to go through and dig into things like that because there's a lot of little things like that that you know you end up wondering about that matter. You know the connect. Ultimately, what matters is whether or not this could function as he says. Because if all the pieces are there for something to function in the manner as he's putting it. Well, then at that point, you know, it's like the Baghdad battery. In my opinion, the onus is on you to explain why, if you believe that it didn't actually do what they claim. If you don't think it was actually any sort of a galvanic cell, then you have the onus on becomes on you is to explain why all the pieces are there in the proper place to work. Japan maybe is one of the few cultures that doesn't seem to have a flood origin myth. Yeah, they got a lot of flood myths, but not origins of the culture. Yeah.
Before the Egyptian pyramids.
Right.
So I don't agree with that. I think that they were building these stone circles much closer to the end of the last ice age.
Okay.
Because they were utilizing their knowledge of earth forces that they have been studying for years and learning from these natural processes. And I'll show you exactly the evolution of the technology from the mindset of a Neolithic person and how I think this technology originally developed. So that's been a big question, right? In the pursuit of the answers for the function of ancient structures, where did the knowledge come from?
Yeah.
And how did they get from point A to pyramids? And in the context of this presentation, I want to establish how you can get from point A, from studying nature, to implementing that in Egyptian pyramids.
Okay.
So let's talk about Avebury for a second,
yep.
The Serpent Temple Complex, mm-hmm. which is a prime example of the utilization of all of these earth natural resources. So this is a picture of the entire temple complex, which has three main components. Mm-hmm. You have the central voltage receiver, the big circle, the concentric circle system.
Yep.
You have the head end and the tail end.
Right.
And Avebury is literally designed to facilitate the uptake of diurnal telluric currents. So telluric mm-hmm. currents are diurnal, which means they flow from east to west during the day, and they flow from north to south at night. So they flow from east to west during the day following the sun, and then they follow the geomagnetic poles at the night. So you'll see Avebury has an opening on the east side and on the north side
mm-hmm.
that's specifically designed for the uptake of telluric currents. And the tilt of it is directly calibrated to Earth's axial tilt. So that tilt is not arbitrary. It's specifically designed to receive telluric currents into the structure itself. And this was actually tested by John Burke, who wrote a fascinating book. Again, shout out Hugh Newman for bringing this to my attention, who actually tested these electric fields inside of these structures. So this isn't speculation that these structures can accumulate electric fields. It's been tested and documented in John Burke's work. And he thinks that these electric fields and magnetic forces inside of these things are for seed modification. So he also has a hypothesis.
All right. So, you know, the gathering of telluric currents via big things like this is going to be give me something I want to see tested again. It's like this is stuff that personally I would want to, this where I want to see the science stuff. Call me Doubting Thomas, you know, but if Jesus was here, I'd be asking to stick my fingers in his hands and thrust my hand into his side. And it seems to me that things like this need borne out, because this is very much at the crux of these kinds of things. This is big if true. You know, if they were able to harness electricity in this sort of way, this is really big. And honestly, where my mind would be, where Jeff is trying to prove what the pyramids were for, which makes sense. If I was to try to prove his hypothesis, I would want to look for in one place the testing. For example, like he talked about different pitches of the pyramids used, different angles, pitch is a construction term, sorry. The different angles of the pyramids used to facilitate the electrons, the electricity traveling different along it, right? So if you're doing it that way, you're going to have some place we had trial and error, right? And this is the kind of things you have to test these things on a bit of a larger scale. Some of these things don't extrapolate well by scale. So anyway, I would want to see, you should be able to find a place where they did this testing, if such a thing is true. Well, am I going to fight Dave? Oh, God, no. Dave's going to post a retraction. Duh. I mean, are you not keeping up?
This that connects these structures to agricultural applications. And he thought in his book that lightning was a byproduct and an unintentional consequence of this electric field accumulation. And I only found out about this book after I met Hugh Newman in like 2023. And I started reading the book on our way to Japan. Mm. And he started talking about all the same stuff that I was talking about, albeit with a different end product.
Right.
And he specifically mentioned that lightning would absolutely be striking these things, but it was an unintended consequence. I think that it was the direct intention was to attract lightning strikes.
Right.
So what happens, right? We have the telluric currents from below that are concentrated by the stone circle, which develops a positive charge on the surface of the earth that is a target for negatively charged cloud-to-ground lightning. Stone circles are surface charge accumulators that uptake telluric currents from the earth and develop a charge on the surface of the earth that is a direct target for negatively charged cloud-to-ground lightning. So why were they doing that? And is there any proof that this was happening? So this is the Callinace stone circle. And this system operated the exact same way, where it was developing a positive charge within the stone circle that attracted negatively charged cloud-to-ground lightning. Turns out that there was an investigation of the Callinace stone circle in this paper, Geophysical Investigation of the Neolithic Callinace Landscape, from the University of St. Andrews. So they went out to this stone circle and they did magnetic testing of the site, and they found this star-shaped signature in the center of the stone circle that I will quote, "These features are interpreted as indicative of past lightning strikes." So here is academic proof that there were lightning strikes at ancient stone circles.
Right.
So again, we've established a scientific connection between telluric current accumulation, subterranean natural resources, lightning strike locations. And now we have proof of this hypothesis that was developed by the University of St. Andrews in their magnetic study of the Callinace stone circle.
And so why exactly?
Yeah, I wouldn't jump to calling it proof just yet myself. It's interesting. I wouldn't, but yeah, it doesn't. Again, I'd need to see some more evidence of this pulling the telluric currents and stuff together. I'll have to check out some of the papers that he's got linked in some of his videos. I'm sure I can just look this stuff up or just email Jeff. We'll have to check out some of the papers and stuff when I go to make my final video on it. But yeah, if you have proof of a hypothesis, doesn't that make it a theory? Now, that is an interesting question. Let's do a little basic science education while we're here. Let people catch up on the... since they're watching, some of y'all are watching ads and whatnot. Look, excuse me. When it comes to a scientific hypothesis, in order for it to advance into the level of being a theory, it has to have all the evidence, all the data that's currently in has to support that hypothesis, and none of it can oppose it, and nothing can oppose it. So this is, again, where I would call a lot of archaeology stuff not science, because a lot of these things are so wishy-washy that you can't really call them theories. But the idea that a hypothesis becomes a theory just because it makes an accurate prediction, or because some of what it says is true, it isn't true. In order to become a theory, it has to be like, it has to explain everything we see, and there has to be nothing that kicks the tires of it hard. So like with the electromagnetic theory, for example, it describes pretty much everything that we know about electricity. And there's nothing that we know that flies in the face of it. Now, a lot of times these theories are incomplete. Like, in particular, our theory on gravity is woefully incomplete compared to what we know about other sources of energy. From what I understand, it's a strong point of argument for the electric universe people. But at any rate, the big deal is you don't know for sure, or you don't know for sure, but you can't. When it goes from a hypothesis to a theory, you've got a lot better idea. Thoughts on Thoth? Well, I mean, you know, Thoth was, you know, there's a lot to say about Thoth. I'd have to, you know, make a video about that one, unfortunately, if I was to really dig into that. Sorry. What do we got here? 12 bonfires, by the way. Theory of relativity versus quantum's another one. Yeah, exactly. There are things where we really run into issues. Yeah, what is the nature of consciousness? Fuck, I don't know, man. I wish I had an idea what the nature of consciousness is. I'm good at altering it.
Exactly. Do they want lightning again?
So
for these, like, for like Stonehenge and for this place, like, why do they want lightning hitting those stone circle monuments?
So it is for the production of atmospheric nitrate fertilizers. So when lightning strikes, it creates a chemical reaction in the atmosphere that creates water-soluble nitrate fertilizers. So they built these stone circles all around Europe. They are everywhere, all over Japan, to attract lightning, rain, and agricultural fertilizers that are created during lightning strikes to specific agricultural areas.
Right.
It's all about feeding the people. So again, we're talking about a civilization that just survived.
Okay, now this right here is that, like, this is the kind of thing that I have no problem with, right? I mean, the idea that there's lightning, you know, that they built these things to facilitate lightning and to draw water and stuff. And it is true that, like, it is true that, you know, that, you know, you raise something from the ground, it's going to draw lightning. It is true that lightning, does create, like, chemicals that, you know, it does make the ground more fertile. And, you know, so it is an interesting idea. And, lightning would be hitting it more to this day, but I honestly think that those areas, I mean, in those areas, I would imagine that lightning probably does still hit those things to this day. Although nowadays, a lot of times, you know, we'll have something that's way fucking taller nearby, like radio towers and stuff. And I don't really know how much that would affect lightning from the clouds and stuff. It's they probably have lightning rods and stuff set up around a lot of these areas. I don't know for sure. These are things honestly worth checking out, which is, you know, I was going to go through this guy's stuff anyway. Like I said before, I wanted to go through Jeff's stuff in more detail, but this is honestly probably the best way to do it. And I get your guys' feedback as well. I get to make some content and make a couple of dollars while I continue to do other stuff. Like, I've just about should be filming tonight the video on part one on the Giants and the cover up around the, like, the giant skeletons. You start with the ones in Georgia and the mounds, because honestly, like, you know, at first when I looked at, when I assumed that this stuff wasn't such a big deal, like the giant cover up didn't look like such a big deal to me. I started looking into it and holy shit, that is a huge, like, dude, it's very reminiscent of the elongated skulls, where it's just like they just kind of seem like they just kind of did whatever the hell they wanted. Thank you, Frank. I will keep them coming. I appreciate it. Maybe it was a lot of work for fertilizer. You know, it is possible. But anyway, let's continue.
I have a massive cataclysm. Mm-hmm. So what's the number one most important thing? food. Mm-hmm. We got to make sure that the generations survive.
Right.
So we're going to start building systems that implement our knowledge of Earth's natural resources to bring lightning, rain, and fertilizer to the areas where we're doing our hunting, gathering, and proto-agricultural activities.
So what is your take on Göbekli Tepe?
Göbekli Tepe may have had a similar operation. That's not a structure that I've looked at in depth.
Okay.
So I haven't developed a thorough hypothesis on Göbekli Tepe. Mm-hmm. Shout out Matt Sibson from Ancient Architects. I'll mention him later in this mm-hmm. presentation as well. He's done some great work on the symbolism of Göbekli Tepe that mm-hmm. is also related to tracking agricultural activities and hunter-gatherer activities.
Yeah.
It's basically like a repository for survival knowledge.
Yeah, the big stones and the carvings into those pillars at Göbekli Tepe,
yeah.
the dudes with the hands and stuff.
Yeah.
It's very similar to the ones on Easter Island.
Yes. Yeah. So early shout out to Andy Hall, one of the prolific researchers from the Electric Universe Theory and the
All right, before we jump more into the Electric Universe stuff, let's go ahead and discuss Göbekli Tepe for a minute. Göbekli Tepe, the symbolism there is really wild in the fact that they really need to do more digging there so that we could see how much different symbolism is there. There's quite, I think that we're probably looking at some sort of proto-written language there. I think that we find a lot about early human activity after the Ice Age by looking there. And you know what Danny said there about the statues on Easter Island is very true. They do look a lot. They do hold their hands in a similar way to the ones at Göbekli Tepe. And they're all over the world, as a matter of fact, in similar manner with their hands, their navel holding statues, as Graham Langdon points out in his book, The Mystery of the Navel Holding Statues. But yeah, it's interesting. Oh, but that's a discovery for future generations. Yeah.
The Thunderbolts project, where he actually developed a hypothesis on the handbags and those weird handbag symbols right. that you see at Göbekli Tepe and also in these Sumerian glyphs with the bird people carrying the handbags.
Right.
He thinks that those handbags represent cumulonimbus thunderstorm clouds.
Oh, interesting.
So the civilization is depicting thunderstorms. Lightning storms.
The bags contained clouds.
He thinks they symbolically represent thunderstorm clouds.
Based on what?
He goes through a very in-depth explanation of how the bag itself represents the airflow convection. You got to have Andy Hall on the show.
All right. I think the handbags, I think, are a lot easier explained by just being symbols for astronomical knowledge. What the fuck are the handbags? Well, let's go ahead and I'll just go ahead and grab a picture of some right here so we can show you. I know a lot of you people already know, but a lot of you guys don't. And so, like, for example, we'll just go there. What do you got to? Remove this one from the stage. Boy, this is all tricky. You guys have me working hard. Look at this. This is insane. Next thing you know, I think I did the internet for a living or something. All right. You see the little handbag here, these Sumerian bastards holding. You see these kinds of things all over the world, right? Of this kind of symbolism that is basically dude holding the bag. Now, at Göbekli Tepe, there's three at the top of Pillar 43. And that, Dr. Martin Sweatman says, he believes is the, let's click on that one here. Come on. Dr. Martin Sweatman says that he believes that these represent those three handbags. You'll notice each one's got an animal next to it. And he thinks that the main body of this represents one day of one of the solstices or the equinoxes, and that each one of those handbags represents another solstice or equinox. And what he's thinking is that each one of those symbols is the half sun is a sun rising, right? And with that, if that is true, which is an interesting idea, making it a handbag, in my mind, would be a symbol for astronomical knowledge. This person knows how to read the stars or learn from the stars. I know it's not as interesting as some of the other ideas. It's certainly not as interesting as saying that these things are, a stopwatch or something amazing like that. There's all kinds of cool theories that we get about these things, but those the handbag thing, the handbag thing is an interesting thing to talk about because we do see it all over the world, and it's one of the funny things because it's a human psychology. When by the very nature of them saying there was no contact between the old world and the new world before a certain date, anything that implies contact between the old world and a new world, it gets you get to go crazy with it. People take it to the nth degree, and it doesn't have to go from one person explaining things to another. It goes full Ancient Aliens, right? And a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's not being treated serious by the people that you would normally go to expect to treat these things.
Shout out, Andy. But that's his hypothesis on the symbol of the bag. Okay. So those depictions are showing that the civilization had the ability to carry thunderstorms, controlling the weather. Mm-hmm. This is another indication that this is a type one civilization. Manipulation of weather is another hallmark of a type one civilization that is super advanced with the ability to control where thunderstorms occur, which is my hypothesis for the White Horse Hills all over Wiltshire, England,
right, right,
which are directly connected to the stone circle systems. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a way to generate thunderstorms that are directly connected to your stone circle voltage attractor.
Right.
Okay.
All right. So let's make the link between the stone circles and the pyramids.
Yes. So the pyramids operate in the exact same way. Specifically, we'll talk about the Great Pyramid, where the Great Pyramid is uptaking telluric currents, developing charge on the top of the pyramid. That charge on the top of the pyramid serves as a target for negatively charged cloud to ground lightning strike.
Okay.
And the same paper that I'll present here in a minute that shows that the pyramids can accumulate electric fields also shows that when you induce charge from below, the Great Pyramid develops a huge charge on the apex that excludes the capstone. Great Pyramid never had a capstone.
What?
I'll show you exactly.
You told me this last time.
I'll show you exactly why that's the case. But the Great Pyramid is specifically designed to accumulate electric fields in specific areas around the structure.
Okay.
This paper also.
Yeah, this does get, these are things where you want to see these things tested more. And, you know, you put those three pyramids next to each other, the Great Pyramid's getting all the lightning. The other ones ain't getting struck. They're too close to each other, and the thing that's tallest is going to attract the lightning. So unless you had some way to shut off the telluric currents, but even then, it's like this. It's not about the telluric currents. You know, I'm just accepting his stuff there. It's about proximity. You know, whatever is the highest. That's why you don't want to be on a lake fishing in a lightning storm, because you're the high point, right? The lake's flat, and you're bink bink. You're what will you don't need no telluric currents to draw lightning from that. So in that regards, I wonder how the other pyramids were supposed to have got zapped. I'm sure we'll find out as we go forward. I'm just not an idiot. It's just these things make me ask questions because, I want to know how his hypothesis is said to work. I don't have a problem with a lot of the things that he said so far. I do. Again, the electric universe stuff is going to, the more he leans on that, the harder time I'm going to have digging into it. Hello, hello, hello.
Also just mentions here that persistent features such as trees, stones, conductive minerals, again, mentioning stone and conductive minerals, will tend to get struck multiply over time.
Right.
So these are ideal targets for lightning strikes.
Hold that thought. I got to get pee real quick.
Okay.
We're back.
Okay. So again, going back to the materials that they use for construction, this is going to apply directly to my hypothesis on Teotihuacan.
Okay.
When you see mica, think high voltage applications. Mica is a high voltage insulator. And mica was utilized in the construction of Stonehenge in the altar stone, which they recently found was brought from like Scotland into England.
Oh, wow.
They brought it from a very, very long distance, specifically for its high mica content. And Stonehenge also tracks the phases of the moon. As we just mentioned, that there's a direct connection between the phases of the moon and the tides. So Avebury is also a tidal calculator that tracks the phases of the moon, the tides, for a timing mechanism to know exactly when and where lightning was going to strike. Here's a paper called The Moon Effect on Lightning. Basically corroborates everything I just said.
With that's fascinating.
Obelisks, stones, standing stones and menhir. This is us in Japan looking at a huge red granite obelisk stone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a standing stone or a menhir. These were the lightning rods that just gave the shortest path to ground and the lightning a direct target to strike at the center of these systems. So all the standing stone and menhir, this is another one in Japan at the Ogami Gaishi stone circle, where there's andesite stones that have a huge magnetic field. The magnetic field is a remnant magnetic field from lightning strikes on these andesite stones.
Wow.
Here's some standing stones.
This is Japan.
From Europe. This one here is in Japan. This is at the Ogami Gaishi stone circle. And this one is pretty close to where we live in Japan. Another one of these obelisks.
Interesting that all the ones that they're showing there are surrounded by trees, because then it's not going to get zapped the same. The basic idea behind the electric universe is that it's not gravity that ties us all together. It's electricity, that it's an electromagnetic harmony kind of that ties solar systems, and that basically that is the unifying force in the universe. As it's not gravity, it's electricity. So to be on a very fundamental level. So a lot of this stuff, it'll posit there's electrical discharges and stuff that will happen, like static electricity kind of jumps, arcs between things like the moon and the earth and shit like that. Again, every time I start to read it, it's always a little bit where immediately I'm like, oh, come on, man. But again, I work with this shit for a long time, so you end up just having a hard time with it then.
And you see here at the top of this thing, there's a braided rope and a symbol that I'll show you here in just a second that is a symbol that adorns tons of Japanese temples that establishes the connection between thunderstorms, lightning, and agriculture.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's all over Japan. So again, obelisks, standing stone, menhir are all lightning rods, right? Because of the higher electrical potential at the top of the stone itself creates an ideal target for a cloud to ground lightning strikes. Basically just giving it a target to strike.
Got it.
Washington Monument.
Yep.
Getting struck by lightning. This is exactly what they were for. Same thing here. So getting into the Japan research.
Okay.
This is at the Oshido Ishi Hill in Kumamoto, Japan.
You went to Japan recently to look at all this stuff.
Yeah, we live part-time in Japan.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have our place.
This is very recent for you though, right?
Yeah, very recent. Yeah. So we went in September 2024 for a month-long research expedition, fell in love with Japan, visited over 100 ancient sites all over Japan.
Wow.
Fell in love with it. There are some. There is only one that I know of that is an archaeologically documented artificial pyramid, but there's tons that people speculate, but they've never been excavated. And I'll talk about that here in just a minute about the Korematsu Pyramid and the excavations at the Korematsu Pyramid that connect to ball lightning and this geothermal subterranean source of possibly either volcanic energy or sulfide-bearing hot spring gas coming from below the structure.
Okay.
Super.
That's pretty interesting stuff, the idea of them tapping into all these different energy sources. We found that gravity doesn't spin the galaxy, right? Yeah, at last I heard that it was like centrifugal force from the early days, right? From what I understand, but the electric universe stuff. I would have to dive into pretty heavily in order to check it out. It's never. You work with this stuff for a while and it becomes difficult to, like, I know theory. I know a lot of people worked as an electrician and they just pulled wire and they installed some outlets and lights and they're like, I'll hear every now and again from somebody telling me that I don't know anything because that's all electricians were. But, you know, I did a lot of troubleshooting. I did a lot of service work. You had to know theory. You had to understand freaking phases, and you had to understand waveforms, and like it's not as complicated as like say working with microwaves will be and shit, but like I've seen shit that would fuck with the guy's head. Like if you start mixing the neutrals between two different services and wait until you see what happens, then you fucking I've seen testing between the ground and a 250-foot roll of THHN that was off of the ground. And I'm getting 30 volts because it's just all feedback. So anyway, I should probably talk about that if for a second. You know, hit the idea there that the there's a bunch of different ground sources of power under the ground is really these are the kind of thing I don't have a problem with people tapping. It's just how they would know about it is the only thing. And that's where you kind of have to find some of the trial and error. A lot of these things took a lot for us to discover. So like, again, to talk about electricity, dudes were fucking with electricity and magnets a bunch, and one dude realized that if he took a wire and suspended it where it was kind of loose and he ran a current through it and put it over a magnet, it would do that over the magnet. And that was the beginning of the motor. And there were probably a trillion man hours of people fucking around with electricity before they got to that point. So, you know, when you start talking about things on these huge scales, at some point, like I was saying earlier, at some point you should probably find a place where these things were experimented with and people learned.
Pretty interesting. Again, we're talking about type one civilization stuff, right? Where they're utilizing all of the forces of the earth integrated into the function of these structures.
Right.
So here at Oshido Ishi Hill, they have this configuration of andesite stones that you can see here. The top of this one is pretty melted because of lightning strikes on this stone. And the researchers at Kumamoto University have come to the conclusion that these andesite stones at the top of this hill are magnetized because of lightning strikes. That's the conclusion of it here. Whoa. Stones are magnetized by lightning. So this is an example of a possibly natural formation that could have provided the impetus and the knowledge for the development of this stone circle technology. So let's say you're a Neolithic person and you're watching these thunderstorms and lightning is always striking near this kind of stone circle type formation at the top of the hill. And you notice that all of the land surrounding these lightning strikes is much more fertile. So they begin to develop a connection between lightning strikes, rain, and the fertilization of the agricultural material in that area. So it's not a far leap of the imagination that they would say, hey, what if we move this stone circle from point A to point B? And instead of having a natural outcrop that is a natural target for lightning strikes, we take that configuration and we move it over here because we want lightning over here too.
Yep.
We want it in all the areas that we're hunting and gathering.
Because the lightning brings rain.
Brings rain and agricultural fertilizer. Right. So that is why we find these things all over the world. Because they were bringing lightning, rain, and agricultural fertilizers to areas all over the world for fertilization of crops. Farmers love lightning. And look at the location, the distribution of stone circles.
Well, that's a lot.
They're all over the place. This is a whole bunch of different...
How many stone circles are there?
There's got to be... I don't know the exact number, but on the top left, you can see the location of stone circles all over the UK. They are all over the place. And they're all over Japan, too. They're all over
hundreds.
Europe. Hundreds. Probably closer to thousands.
Wow.
Yeah, they built them all over.
And henges, fewer henges.
Yeah, yeah. So this shows stone circles, henges, long barrows, and chamber tombs, and hill forts and promontory forts.
Wow.
Yeah, these hill forts are most likely cumulonimbus thunderstorm generators.
Okay.
But we find these things all over Japan. This is the Arahabaki, which is a Japanese Jomon figurine. Looks pretty weird, right? But
yeah, it looks like an alien.
Yeah, this is an example of some of the figurines that were being made by the Japanese Jomon civilization that built these stone circles.
It kind of looks like the little alien from Men in Black that was inside the guy's face.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
All right. Yeah, that was... this idea that lightning was, that they were raising stones to call lightning to an area. I don't have a problem with that. You wouldn't even need a stone circle. You just need one big rock and you're going to call lightning. So I can understand that. And like I was saying a second ago, it's interesting that there was a lot of trees around a lot of these now because it would stop them from drawing the lightning because the trees are going to draw it up. And we have radio towers and stuff all over the place now and skyscrapers and stuff. And, I dare say it, if the currents under the earth are drawing lightning, I dare say we've changed a lot of the currents on the planet now. And things are not the same as they used to be. But, it becomes very difficult to know for sure, right? I mean, we know that these things, we know that anything that's raised on a field, that if there's a thunderstorm, it's going to draw lightning. Now, whether or not it'll draw thunderstorms. So, see, that's where you start hitting the cumulonimbus cloud thing, and that becomes a little bit more, problematic to me. The drawing of clouds, cumulonimbus is a type of cloud, for those of you who don't know, storm cloud. The drawing of clouds to a region, that becomes a little bit more, these are things that can be tested, right? These are things that can be tested. So, some of these things I can take on face value, the nitrogen fixing from electricity and stuff like that. Yeah, that's fine. But, thank you, No Borders. I appreciate that. Muchos gracias. Five more people get to join the dedunking crew. Circles are direction potentials. Okay, that's an interesting idea. This is stuff that needs to be borne out. I want to see it happen. I don't have a problem with it, but I just want to see it happen. Now, a lot of these things just need to make them start rain when they're all over the place. Yeah. It's difficult. How do you put it? Well, I'm not saying it needs to drill the cloud. What I'm saying is just, let's put it this way. Just because you build a bunch of skyscrapers doesn't mean that you end up with storm clouds in a region. Okay. Just because you build an electric power plant doesn't mean you end up with storm clouds. Just because you build a dam on the river that's making electricity doesn't mean you end up with storm clouds. So, the mechanism by how they're drawing these cumulonimbus clouds in, according to Jeff, is something that I would need to see borne out. That's all I'm saying here. Just saying that's how it works isn't gonna cut it. Now, there's a very good possibility that he's gonna show this like that. That as again, we're going through this piecemeal, but if you think I'm not gonna stop and say, hey, this makes sense to me. This, I can totally see this happening. I don't even need a more proof for this. And then other things where I'm going to say, you know what? I need to see this borne out. That's how this shit's going to go. And that doesn't mean that I'm saying that Jeff's got everything wrong. I'm saying this is where I have questions. There's always going to be questions. Yeah, you need warm air rising to mix with cooler air. There's a lot, you know, it's weather, man. It's not something you can easily influence sure. a building.
And they build these things all over Japan. So you see this twisted rope?
Yeah.
Right? That is something called a shimanawa. And a shimanawa has three different components. You have the mm-hmm. twisted rope, you have these white pieces of paper, mm-hmm. and you have these sheaves. So the twisted rope represents thunderstorm clouds. The shide, the white paper, represents lightning. And the sheaves of material represent rice and agricultural crops. Oh, wow. So in Japan, all over these ancient temples and all over these megaliths that were being struck by lightning, all the megaliths that are struck by lightning are wrapped in these shimanawa and shide.
No way.
Literally telling you symbolically that there's a connection between thunderstorms, lightning, agricultural fertilizer, and crops.
Right.
All over Japan. Shimanawa and shide. And across...
All right. I wonder if that's... That's his interpretation, or if that's the interpretation. That'll only take a second to find out, wouldn't it? How do you spell that again? It should be on my screen. Shimanawa. Hope the translation software was... Shite. Okay. Yep. Historically, the cloud rope represents the clouds, and the hanging shide represents flashes of lightning and rain, praying for a good harvest. Okay, so anyway, you know, that's what the internet said. The lightning seems pretty obvious, but yeah, that is exactly what it is. And so, yeah, you know, these are the kind of things, in all honesty, I know some people will be bothered by the fact that you have to fact check these things, but look, man. When somebody believes their hypothesis, that it oftentimes makes them blind to things that opposes their hypothesis. And this is true for scientists and independent researchers alike. And as I said, the last one, you know, there's a lot of things that you learn evaluating different hypotheses, especially when you deal with the people involved. It's like you look a lot at the person to see if they're being honest. You look a lot at the hypothesis to see if it's evolved over time, how robust it is. You find, and so, like, for example, Jeff's a true believer. He's not grifting, 110%. But being a true believer does make it where sometimes you're going to, I had to check and see if maybe he'd changed the interpretation, or if there's 28 different interpretations and he picked the one to run with or whatnot, right? And that's not because I don't trust him. It's because, you know, it's not that I don't trust him because he's not trustworthy. It's that in situations where there's five different avenues, the one that he's going to go with, just like Jimmy Corsetti, a good friend of mine, if you're in a situation where five different avenues were going to support the reshot structure, where five different avenues existed, one of them supports the reshot structure for Atlantis, Jimmy's going to go with that one. And I understand that. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, Jeff's a pretty good dude, man. I like him. I like him quite a bit.
It's the world. We have mythological gods that are also connected to rain, water, fertility, and lightning.
Yep.
So this is Tlaloc, a god that is literally the Aztec god of rain, water, fertility, and lightning. Mm-hmm. Always a connection in ancient mythology. Baal is another one that's connected to lightning and agriculture. This is Japan in Susanoo, another Japanese mythological god that's directly connected to lightning, thunderstorms, rain, and agriculture. Okay, so Pyramid Korematta, the Japanese.
Yeah, I don't have a problem accepting that different gods are connected to rain, lightning, and the harvest. I mean, these things all do kind of coincide. You know, you get lightning with rain, and you get good harvest with rain, so... excuse me. Yeah, it's no, there's a lot of that fertile dirt still there that they say, but you know, a lot of the stuff has the nitrogen fixed soil still around. I mean, they pull the stuff out of it, but let's put it this way. Like, say for instance, I'm looking at we're looking at Jeff's hypothesis. Where I'm at right now, I have no problem that people erected stone circles or erected stones to draw lightning. I have no problem people would expand that into stone circles to make calendars and to make these things multifunctional. I mean, you know, astronomy is something that I talk about a lot in archaeoastronomy. I have no problem believing that these things work together. The more technologically advanced this gets, the harder I'm the more my skepticism is going to be piqued. I mean, this is just, you know, I've drawn the speed running video game parallel before. You know, if you tell me you did a perfect run through the first level of Contra, I'm not going to say that I have a problem with that. If you tell me you did a perfect run through every level of Contra, I'm not going to say I have a problem with that. If you tell me you did that for 16 hours straight, at some point I'm calling bullshit. You know, it's not. At the very least, I'm going to get a whole lot more. I don't know, man. So as we move towards chemical power plants or chemical plant manufacturing and processing facilities, my skepticism will increase. But let me be very, very, I've said it a couple of times, but let me be very clear. I have no problem with the idea of them raising stones to draw lightning. That makes total sense. Me and Jeff talked the first time, as a matter of fact, I had no problem with that. Yes, the stars was their TV, No Borders. That is exactly it. I'm getting a text. I hope it's nobody important. Oh, shit. My buddy Mike, Wandering Wolf, just called me. I'll have to get back to him. Oh, hang on. Let's go back on this here.
East Pyramid. Absolutely fascinating.
How big?
It's comparable to the size of, so it's bigger than the final pyramid on the Giza Plateau. So bigger than Menkaura.
The small one.
Okay. Yeah.
As big as Khafre.
I would say if you cut Khafre in the central one, cut it in half, that's about the size of Korematsu Pyramid. And I'll show you a picture of it here in just a second. So this pyramid mountain is directly connected to tons of UFO sightings.
Really?
Yeah. It's a huge UFO site. And at the top of this thing, so we went here, and at the top of this pyramid mountain, it's a flat platform. And there's a shrine built at the top of this flat platform now. And there's all sorts of like UFO, you know, alien stickers and people stuff all over the top.
Well, you know, they had that big nuclear meltdown in Japan too. There's a bunch of UFO sightings.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Now, this is where, you know, like the difference in the way people see things and look at things can really, really change the way people comprehend these types of things. When I was in Sedona, I saw somebody pointed out Secret Mountain to me. There was a bunch of us sitting there. We were at the high school, the little convention center that's right next to the high school there. And somebody pointed out, hey, check out this Secret Mountain. If you look at it with night vision goggles, you're going to see UFOs. And I'm like, well, fuck me, run and hand me those goddamn night vision goggles. I ain't never seen a UFO. I put those on. And I saw all kinds of little things that were just kind of doing this. It was like, okay, maybe it's a drone, maybe it's a UFO, who fucking knows? But then there's like this cloud, right? And from like this cloud, and from behind the cloud, there's like five dots that just kind of like come up and appear, and they move in unison. And, you know, if they were covering, like to guess, it would have been covering half a mile to a mile of fucking area between these dots. And then they all just like disappeared, just kind of like zipped back into the cloud. Now, people around there believe these are aliens. A lot of people believe these are aliens. To me, it seemed like 110%. I don't think the UFOs are going to come to the same fucking spot every night to the point where your goddamn average civilian can see them, and then the government's not out there doing something about it, or at least trying. I mean, to me, it seems way more likely there's just a government base up there. There's some lady playing around with their secret fucking toys up there. That seems way more likely, but that's how I see the thing. So other people look at this stuff and they're like, ah, do you see what this is? This is proof of Anunnaki and stuff. They've been watching this stuff forever. And, you know, as I've said before, I'm not fundamentally opposed to the idea even of like life coming here from Mars. Now it gets a lot more, the odds become a lot less likely. Okay. But I'm not opposed to these ideas because on a fundamental level, man, you know, there is no planet that has a better chance of having life on it outside of Earth than Mars. At some point in the past, intelligent life, as far as we know. You know, if there's anybody that wants to that wants to posit a planet that's got better odds, I'm all ears. You know, and we could say, you know, we've got places like Io and Europa and stuff that could have life on it in this solar system. But intelligent life, at some point in the past, you know, Mars is kind of the prime candidate. I mean, really, and that is because of the existence of us and because of tardigrades and tardigrades and shit like that. So anyway, I'm not opposed to these things on their face, but I do, you know, the odds of it goes down, right? I'm not opposed, you know, if somebody says that they're going to do a kickflip and then land it and then do a freaking 360, I don't say they probably can't do it, but if I haven't seen them do it before, I'm going to guess that they probably can't. Especially back in my day, kickflips was the fucking men from the boys back in the day. Nowadays, anybody does kickflips.
Which I think is directly related to electrical phenomenon, like ball lightning, like plasma phenomenon. So this is a super mysterious mountain that is directly connected with all sorts of UFO sightings. Here's a painting of the Coromanta Pyramid that shows one of these circular spheres that have been seen. They see these over and over and over again at Pyramid Coromanta. Wow. Yeah, this is an ancient depiction of it. In my opinion, these things are ball lightning, which is a electrical, possibly plasma phenomenon that's directly associated with thunderstorms and lightning. Mm-hmm. And they even have mythology about ball lightning in Japan, where they call it a Raiju. So this little creature, right, this Japanese mythological creature that can shapeshift, and they also find associations with weird smells. So for example, sulfur.
Of course.
Yeah, which is also closely associated with UFO phenomenon.
And the devil.
Like hissing, glowing, demons. Sulfur smell, demons, all of this stuff is closely associated with ball lightning. And again, this mythological creature known as the Raiju in Japan, which is symbolically representing of ball lightning. The Shinto god is Raiju.
I recognize Electric Universe talking points. The Electric Universe guys like ball lightning because ball lightning kind of breaks the normal rules for the stuff that we've got down here. But yeah, I mean, ball lightning is an interesting phenomenon. It's definitely the kind of thing that we don't know enough about. And this is why, this is why it's important. Here I say where I have a hard time reading the Electric Universe stuff. But this is why it's important to try to put aside your biases to dive into things. Because say, for instance, just hypothetically speaking, there's not a goddamn thing in the Electric Universe theory that's worth a shit. But they have a freaking succinct explanation for ball lightning, and everybody disregards it for 150 years because it's attached to all this rest of this crazy shit. Now, I mean, this is just a hypothetical, but this wouldn't be the first time we've seen something like that happen. So it is important to evaluate these kinds of things without knee jerking it, which is why I haven't made a video on the Electric Universe stuff, because I still haven't researched it properly. I've been invited to by Electric Universe guys, but I just haven't got to it yet.
Jin, the Shinto god of lightning. So this is going to talk about the excavation of the Coromanta Pyramid. So they actually excavated this thing, and they're excavating the top of this thing, and it's disrupting radio waves. They did ground penetrating radar, scanned the structure, and they found subterranean objects that were interfering with their electrical equipment inside of this pyramid. So here's a picture of them GPR scanning this thing. And during the excavation, they cracked into the granite chamber. So they discovered a granite chamber inside of the pyramid that this guy directly connects to being similar to the Great Pyramid with the granite chambers on the inside. They cracked accidentally into the foundation of this chamber. They leave for lunch, and all of a sudden they turn back around and there's flames shooting out of the top of the mountain. This is documented in his archaeological story. So this was during the 1970s, I believe. I forget the time period of this, but I believe it was during the 1970s. So they walk away and there's these flames, colored flames shooting out of the top of the mountain, which would be directly connected to a subterranean gas source, either methane or sulfur oxides of some sort, possibly hydrogen sulfide, located inside of the chamber or directly below the Coromanta Pyramid.
Well, the fuck if I ain't gonna look up that pyramid. I mean, geez Louise, right? Press some buttons, see what we find. Coromanta, is that it? All right. Here we go. I found let's go ahead and we'll share the other screen and we'll look at it together. Does that sound like fun, kids? It's a man-made pyramid of 7 layers built around 4,000 years ago. It's probably a Jomon word. Is that right? See, this is all lining up with what he's saying. Pyramid shape was created by the Jomon people. Doo-doo-doo. I want to see. I'm not okay. The cardinal directions are shifted by 5 degrees. That's quite a bit from precession, so it has been around. Well, it didn't talk about anything exploding, but that's all right because I'll go ahead and look into that here in the future. I got a phone call from Mike Collins from Wandering Wolf, so I normally do these things for 2 hours, but I'm going to go ahead and cut it off here in about 5 minutes so I can give him a call back and see what the fuck's going on because he's part of the crew that's doing this event in Austin, and we're trying to put it all together and make things happen, and I'm getting ready to leave town to go promote all that, which, again, I'm leaving town in like a week from today, and I'm going to be flying to Arizona and then taking off, doing a road trip from there. Oh, thank you so much, Major Dickbo. And I can see building a big tower to increase chance of lightning strikes, a groovy show for the plebs. The Egyptians could have been messing with a few volts, but not some massive power plant. Yeah, see, I tend to agree on these kinds of things. But here's honest to God fucking truth. Hey there, Timmy. Thank you. Thanks, DOA. Thanks, Spam. Like, here's the honest to God truth. You know, if Jeff goes and he puts all this together, and I look through everything and I reject 95% of it, but that 5% that I take is the erection of stone circles is quite often done, and standing stones is quite often done to attract lightning. That can change the way you look at ancient structures all over the fucking world forever, for every evaluation. And, hey, good, glad you made it there for a minute. It changes the way you look at these things forever, ever and ever and ever, okay? Every time that you go to look at another monument, here's one more thing. It's just like archaeoastronomy. Here's, okay, is this place potentially a habitation? Maybe. Is this place potentially used for an observation point for the stars? Maybe. Is this place potentially used to attract lightning? Maybe. You just add fucking potentials to it. And that in and of itself is a huge fucking boon. And these are the kind of things, yes, it's worth the 5%. Thank you. It's so worth the fucking 5%. Like I've said this a number of times about the vases, that if they prove, if they're done, when they go through all the stuff, that the vases at the very least show that they had access to much, much better lathes much earlier than we gave them credit for in ancient Egypt. Now, I don't see evidence for ancient high machining or ancient high technology in those things. Ben does. And so just the fact that Ben sees it and I don't, that doesn't mean that he's right or that I'm right. But if I am right, what Ben has done was still push the dating of the lathe back by 1600 years in Egypt. That's fucking huge. That's huge. And the you know, it's maybe not what he wants, certainly not what he wants, and he's certainly not going to get credited for it from the Egyptologist. Instead, they'll use that as a stick to tell him he's wrong. Ha ha ha, you're wrong. But the fact of the matter is, he advances our knowledge, and we're trying to get you up to speed with Ben, Timmy says. Yeah, it'll happen one of these days. Ben dropped the video today. Good. I've been waiting for this one to come out. I like Ben quite a bit. There's not very many people in this community that I actually don't like as individuals, even people that I disagree with on a lot of things, like Billy Carson. Me and him disagree with like an 80%, 90%. I can fucking, Billy's fun. He's funny. I talk to Billy all day long. I could leave my wallet on the table and walk away from it and not worry about it. You can't say for most of the white guys I know, but for real, Billy, and there's so many people like that in this community. There are people that I've rubbed elbows with, and I'm just like, dude, you're kind of a cunt. But most of them, that's not the case. It tends to be the prima donna shit that really rubs me the wrong way because I'm so fucking salt of the earth, blue collar. I still wear fucking shoes with holes in them and shit, man. I mean, I'm old school. My car has a dent in the side, and I just because I became less poor white trash doesn't mean that I'm not still white trash. So anyway, thank you guys so much for watching. I'm going to be doing this again. Shots fired at Rogan. Oh, Rogan's a stud. I like Joe. I pick on him sometimes. I have made videos addressing some of the stuff that I think he got wrong. But yeah, I like Joe. thanks, Jerry, for the constant promotion here today. I really appreciate you guys showing up. Maybe I'll do my next stream on this a little bit later in the day when it's doing during the weekdays. I'm trying to make it where it's catching as many of you as I can, but it seems like these ones on the early afternoon, they're kind of scheduled around my time. My son has wrestling practice. It starts in an hour and a half. Normally I'd be getting off of here with an hour to spare to make sure he's all squared away. But maybe I'll start doing them on days he doesn't have wrestling practice and then do them a little bit later. And anyway, thanks again, you guys. I really appreciate you showing up. Thanks so much for the super chats and the support and all of the love. I love you guys. Have a good evening, and we will see you next time. I'm disappearing now. Goodbye.